Blog Talk Radio.
In usual senses of the discussion of poetry, it's assumed that the poet and or those involved with the poetry will, at least in the period in which I was in school, it was assumed that there was a meaning to be extricated from the context of the writing, and that this was, after all, what the poem, quote, had to say, unquote. So that one was asked, therefore, to write a precis or to qualify the action of the various symbols present and to remark the levels of ambiguity, for example, as in Empson's sense, and so on and so forth. Well, now none of these agencies of engagement are per se, wrong. I mean, anything that brings one into the modality that poetry is, I think, is useful. But anything that tends to either assume or insist that there's a point thus to be taken away, I mean, I think that's a very mistaken notion. And let me think if I can think of some quick way to demonstrate it. It would be, for example, like going swimming, wherein the situation of swimming was only admitted as some, means of getting across a lake, for example. I mean, you went swimming in order to swim across the lake, and then having accomplished that was the end of swimming. I mean, in other words, I realized, for example, that in the usual teaching of reading and writing, especially, I see it in my daughters now, they are all through their elementary schooling. In reading, they were constantly asked to summarize the story, to tell what they, what the story meant, and to, that is, they were really insistently being asked to finish the story and say what it meant. They were rarely, if ever, asked to read, to be in the reading. Well, it would be like as though dancing were a means of moving from A to B, and that's all, As though dancing weren't a state of experience, not only with its own initiation and condition, but entirely in itself. As though you danced in order to get, to exercise your muscles or to have. I mean, as though you had to dance for a purpose. Well, you do dance for a purpose, but the purpose is in the dancing, not in something you take out of the dancing. You were transformed in the dancing. As any one of you who have danced, really intensely, know that you're taken out of yourself and you're transformed entirely by the dancing. But that, too, isn't the point of it. There isn't a point to dancing except to dance, And there isn't a point to poetry, and I realize now that's the risk I've been worrying about all the time, and I've been, sort of almost flirting with the dangers of that. I've let myself fall into a kind of statement that's really getting dangerously close to saying that the purpose of poetry is the transformation that it creates. No, that's not it either. I want instantly to reject that it has a purpose. Poetry has no purpose.
Welcome to Late Night Poet, and I am Richard Weissman, and this is In Our Craft, Sullen Art. That was Creeley, and it's titled Poetry Has No Purpose. And we've got a bunch of people on hold. Let me bring them on. 614, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Neutron.
Hey, Neutron. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was ill before, but I'm on the mend. So every day is getting a little bit better. So we've got a bunch of people that are actually in the green room. Let me bring them on. Let's go this one next.
No, that's me.
703,
yeah,
you're
Tom.
On.
Hello, it's Tom B.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing tonight? Yeah.
Oh, I'm good. I just thought I'd stop by.
Awesome. Good having your voice on the show, as always. So we've got two more people to bring on, and then we'll start we'll start really conversing. So someone was kind enough to rename. Laurent is now with us. How you doing, Laurent?
Good, good, Richard. How you doing? Hi, everyone.
Very cool. Let me just bring Pam on, and then let's do a little talk about the Black Mountain Poets.
Hey,
hi,
Richard.
Pam. You're on.
Hey, Neutron, and Tom, and Lauren. It's good to hear you all.
Okay.
Hey.
Well, Pam, I'm going to have to tip my hat because this was actually your idea to do an evening of Black Mountain Poets. And sure enough, I mean, not only do we have, you know, a full room right now, but we have a full board as a result and some real quality pieces. So I'm going to kind of give you first word. First of all, I guess, what did you think of the Creeley intro? And second of all, what was your idea in terms of devoting a night to Black Mountain Poets?
Well, first of all, if I may indulge in being honest, with all due respect to Mr. Creeley, I'm not 100% sure I agree with him because I think there's many purposes that poetry serves. But I won't delve too deeply into that. I do appreciate his approach to what he had to say. And as you had mentioned in Late Night Poets Room, Richard, it is a very zen approach. And sometimes people who are very like A-type personalities like me need to hear something from somebody who has a more zen approach to something. So I definitely really appreciated that. I also appreciate his contribution to poetry, and I'm really thankful to you and Neutron for doing this show on the Black Mountain Poets. It was funny because I discovered them, honestly, only about a year ago, and I have used some of their poems. I liked John Wiener's and, you know, some of their poetry as prompts for some of my shows. And I was, again, delving back into that article that I sent you the link to, trying to decide where I wanted to go, and it just popped in my head. You know, I think I need to offer this up to Richard and Neutron. I think that by putting some of them together on one show, it gives an opportunity. And there's something about them, especially Hilda Morley, and I'm trying to think who else, that really I feel like connects emotionally. And I love the way they express themselves and how one of my favorite parts about them is the fact that they don't feel the need to structure their stanzas. I feel the need to structure my stanzas, but I appreciate that, you know, they gave it, well, the Black Mountain College in general, not just poetry, but they gave, contributed greatly to the arts. But it is definitely the poets that is the most lasting legacy. And so I'm looking forward to this show.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I think that we've got a really strong board, and it was a great idea. And, you know, I myself, I've kind of danced around the whole thing. Like, Levertov is a huge influence on my work, so I was kind of familiar with it. And going outside of the world of poetry, Cage and Cunningham were huge influences, especially back in the 90s. John Cage was a big influence on me, so I've been influenced by them, but I never really studied the poets as a group until you brought it to my attention that they were almost considered a school, informally, but nevertheless. And so thank you again for that. And it's always great, you know, as a researcher, I just love learning new stuff. So it's been a fun 2 weeks putting this whole thing together. And now I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Neutron. What did you think about that intro and the poems that we've gotten?
Well, I just have to say that intro was very informative. I'm with Pam on this one. I don't know that I necessarily agree wholeheartedly with the intro, but having said that, it was quite zen, a zen take on, almost a mindfulness take on poetry, that it's in the action rather than the words that you complete the poetry. As far as poetry goes tonight, very strong board. In my pre-reading, I was quite excited that even though I think most people gravitated towards the one or two prompts, that the interpretations were vastly different. And that's always interesting and enlightening to see where people take their inspiration from the prompts.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree with you. And it's amazing how many ways people can interpret the same words. And you see that when we're reading these poems, you know, that we, like five of us, will each give a different interpretation of the same words in the poem. Laurent, what was your thought on that intro?
I had real misgivings with what the gentleman said. If he claims that poetry has no purpose, well, it could have the purpose of simply putting words on paper, or it could have the purpose of speaking about love and truth and all things that matter to men. But if you deny both of those, I fail to see how you could attach any significance to dancing, which is an incomplete involvement of the body, or to swimming, which is, I mean, strictly exhilarating from time to time, not just a reason to get to the other side of the river. I don't know. I found it kind of full of holes. But I did enjoy what else went with your contest. The whole thought of projectivist poetry, projective verse, and the fact that a breath is basically a line, the heart by way of the breath to the line, etc. And how one thing, well, one perception must immediately and directly lead to a further perception. There are many things in the essay on projective verse by Charles Olson that I really enjoyed reading. Not so much the comment here at the beginning of the show.
Yep. So I'm going to get Tom's feedback, and then I'll give you my perspective as well. Tom, what'd you think of that open?
There are things about Creeley that I deeply enjoy. At the same time, there are things about Creeley that I find myself greatly in contention with. If all the poetry is just putting lines upon paper, it has no purpose. If the words that we put on that paper touch and change someone else's understanding or someone else's vision of the universe, then we have become party to an interaction, party to creating an art, at which point we no longer can take ourselves out of the equation and pretend to be meaningless. And so it begins to have great purpose.
Absolutely, great.
I'm not
going
to go any further.
Great.
If I try to get up on my little soapbox, you'll never get me to shut up. So we're not going to go there.
Well, I appreciate that. And I kind of put it up because I thought it was a real radical view that would open the show with some great discourse. And sure enough, it did. And my feeling about it is that what he's proposing has some value in terms of a way of looking at the art. However, it is not, in my opinion, of course, you know, I could be wrong, just my opinion, but in my opinion, it's just one side of the coin. And that's why I chose to write the poem that I wrote, because it starts out where you're looking at the Mandelbrot set, where you can either be diminishing mathematically towards absolute zero, which is what he's talking about, and that's why he says poetry means nothing, right? Sure, from that perspective, but the other side of the Mandelbrot, and so just to kind of like make it a little bit more grounded, so you're saying in a human being, you know, you can go from the organism as a whole all the way down to the submolecular structure and, you know, the atoms and, you know, subatomic particles, and that's approaching absolute zero. And in that way, sure, it's finite, doesn't mean anything, but there's the other side, which is that, you know, we're connected to this universe, and it expands out infinitely, and that is the other side mathematically of the Mandelbrot set. And it's really not, it's like saying mathematically that 2 + 2 = 4. It sounds very heady, but in fact the math is irrefutable. And so in one sense, yes, it's minimalistic and it has no purpose, but in the other sense, it has infinite purpose, and it connects us with each other and everything else in the universe, we're, you know, and that's what connection is. We don't have to try to achieve oneness. We are already one. We just have to realize that. So that's why I kind of put it out there so that I could give an intro to my poem.
It's like,
say that's
you've
Tom?
Done with
what?
Wise between, some of this is like pie, which is, there is no end to it. But it's very, very useful. And so
right.
It neither diminishes nor increases. It just becomes a number which has no end.
Right.
And when you look at it from that perspective, it kind of blows up that other, the idea of the finite or the infinite. It's... So one of my favorite jokes is my password is the last 12 digits of pi.
Very good. Okay, so we've definitely explored some of the concepts in Black Mountain poetry. Let's move on and see what we as a group and all poetry and late night poets put together for tonight. And with that means that I'm turning it over to you, Neutron, for our first piece.
Okay, so our first piece is by T. Michelle. And Pam, if you could give this a read, it would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Pierce Twilight Bridge by T. Michelle, and it goes like this. I've met angels carried through fire. Their pylons were pounded, pestle the porter in metrical clashes. Still they rose with honeyed wings. You warehouse these stories, jaundiced by viper stings, trailed after by faint smiles, laid on wastelands. We agreed, did we not, while counting the steps to that high-rise district, how some things don't belong together, like love and rain, heat and waves, strawberries on chocolate cake, like names and hurricanes, tropicals and storms. But you stood on the ledge where frillback pigeons were pecking on chadlock sheaves, surrendering to the cold hands of a tempest. Now I spend my evenings gazing at fluttering parakeets over the pierced twilight river, where once I set free a little black butterfly. End poem.
Great read, Pam. So, Tom, I know that we have limited time with you. Let's give you first word.
This is, I always like her stuff, because she uses metaphor as a language, not just as a disguise. And here she does a beautiful job of opening with the idea that all the high-sounding, wonderful things sometimes do nothing but tear things down until they become the way they want them to be. And that I'm not going to explain her whole poem. I would do her a disservice. And besides that, I can reserve that to when I can have time to write it all out. I just really enjoy this because I like the way that she handles the flow, plays with the contradictions, how some things don't belong together, like love and rain, heat and waves, strawberries on chocolate cakes. Yeah. And nothing's ever harmed with whipped cream, and everything tastes better when dipped in chocolate. I just am delighted by this. I'm going to let it go at that point.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really like this one. I thought it expressed the sorrow of loss with skill, beauty, introspective insight, almost acts as a healing balm for the poet's grieving. And I'm imagining that writing it was quite cathartic. Quite a good job. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I was really very pleased with the opening stanza. It's really gripping. I've met angels carried through fire. Their pylons were pounded, pestles and mortar in metrical clashes. I found the poem to be an illumination of a sadness that is really palpable, an evening's gaze towards where once I set free a little back butterfly. I thought it was a really well-written piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Neutron, what did you think?
Yeah, look, I thought it was a great answer to the prompt, and I see all our torches absorbed, fog dispersed in death's fog. I see all this gentleness like a hound in the water float upward and outward beyond my dark hand. It was a beautiful homage with much reverence, and there was a strength to the rite. It was nuanced and spoke to me of great pain for Tina Michelle's loss, but also the pain that her friend endured in life. I just thought it was really well done.
Great comment. And Pam, as our reader, I'll give you final word.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, this is just a beautiful, heartfelt write. You can just really feel the sense of loss in it. And I like how she looks back on all the things, the common things they shared, and even in a humorous way, the things that they both disliked. And I felt like where Once I Set Free a Little Black Butterfly was just a spot-on ending for releasing your grief. It kind of just, I don't know, just it felt like a gesture of remembrance and mourning. So it's very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. So, Neutron, I see you've got the next poem on the board. And that one, I believe, has a SoundCloud. So let me go ahead and find that. That's Art Junkie. Here it is. Okay.
The Fist and the Flower. I've learned to love you around long periods of silence. Inside every painful pause, I'd hold my breath for what felt forever, as if I lived under the water of waiting. You'd return to me like the clouds, and I'd exhale stale air, gasp for your attention, swallow you in gulps, mouth opened, standing under a fresh desert rain. I've been sitting for days in this stillness, quiet nowhere, slowly dying of drying, a lone flower rooted in the arid earth of a thousand-year drought. I've gone without you before and resisted the distance you've pulled to stretch time like a rubber band, to test the elasticity of my heart, the resilience of my love, the perseverance of my will as proof of my need for you. My love, you exist as a clenched fist, fingernails digging into your palms until bleeding. I am a flower well past her bloom. Even now, my petal edges curl and brown. My skin easily bruises and wilts. My posture slightly droops on the stem of my spine. Open your mind and your closed hand. Pluck me from the land between thumb and forefinger. Pull me close to smell my bouquet before time and decay take me away. Do not refuse me or confuse me with purposeful aloofness. This cold quietness coats my leaves with a killing frost. Allow us to love, and we will be in love, now and always, until we are closed to each other forever.
Thank you, Art Junkie, for the SoundCloud. So, a great write, and let's start the comments off with Laurent, if we can.
Yeah, the stanza, open your mind and your closed hand, pluck me from the land between thumb and forefinger, pull me close to smell my bouquet before time and decay take me away. I enjoyed the casting the lover as a flower that wanted to be picked, that needed to be picked. I thought it was a deeply felt entreaty, a beautifully written piece with an ending plea that really moves the reader. Allow us to love, and we will be in love, now and always, until we are close to each other forever. Just really well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, great comment, too. Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I really felt the push and pull acutely in this poem. A strong longing to be loved on one's terms, not with the intermittent nature with which the individual this poem is written for chooses to love. These parts to you really resonated. My love, you exist as a clenched fist, fingernails digging into your palm until bleeding. I am a flower well past her bloom. And also, this line here just was gold. This cold quietness coats my leaves with a killing frost. Great poem.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was beautifully crafted love poem with roots dangling. Although an atypical interpretation, these types of poems, I like trying to read them through a Song of Solomon lens where love is simultaneously viewed as a romantic partner as well as, and I said atypical, divine entity, which could also be different parts of the self, like the higher self, the true self. And I thought the poem's arc was especially powerful. Open your mind, closed hand, pluck me from the land. That's a great piece. Pam, what do you think?
I have to say, this is just powerful imagery and metaphors and just a wonderful write. And I have to also say that I saw it differently. It wasn't until both you and Neutron commented that I realized that it could be taken as a love poem. I felt like, to me, it felt almost kind of dark, like a one-sided love, like a love that was being begged for. Like it just kind of felt to me like someone giving someone the silent treatment. And while I've changed my mind slightly on that after reobserving it after your comment, I still felt like saying that just because I like, you know, to say something different. And but I have to say, it's good to hear her voice. She's got a beautiful reading voice, and I hope we get more SoundClouds from her. And this was very well done.
Absolutely. And I have to agree, you know, I've read Art Junkie's poetry for a long time, enjoyed her work. This was the first SoundCloud I was able to hear, and my gosh, what a joy it was. Great. Let's move on. I see you put up the next piece, and who's our reader for that one?
If Tom could give this one a read, please.
Tom has dropped.
That's all right. I'll give this one a read.
Okay.
It's called Awed by Love by Yosri. Digging ditches, rejections, crossing oceans of objections. With my love for you, I must do so to win you over exclusively. The light of love shone on me, has increased with my years that inner spiritual force seem to be fettered by my body. I will fight not to give it up, doing every love spell to weave our future rope, your name all over the wounds of nature, carrying you into my tomorrows. The future of us has a big measure of hope. Like the clouds that were in the horizon before the sun came out is our love. The depth of my emotions for you is as a bottomless, massive sea, my sole destination in life. Cast aside storms of doubt and fear, waterfalls of spring will flow once more again. An iota of hesitation cannot sway me, dreaming of our pending union. The warmth of your hug is like the smell of the fragrant flowers. The words of sorrow fall from my lips as softly as the tears from my eyes. I so wish the world could know of the intense love I hold for you. And so on.
Great read, Neutron. So if we could start comments with Pam, what'd you think?
Yeah, I really enjoy Randa's poetry. I like the imagery of, you know, digging ditches of rejections, crossing oceans of objections. And then I will fight not to give it up, doing every love spell to weave our future, wrote your name all over the walls of nature. I like the whole idea of committing yourself to love that much. And the warmth of your hug is like the smell of the fragrant flowers. Yeah, the one thing I like about that line is it's got a sensuality to it, but it's got a sensuality that has an innocence to it. Like I think there's nothing more confirming of affection than a good hug, and I feel like that really just is a wonderful line and a beautiful write all the way through, and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah, great comment. I, too, really like this one. I thought it had tremendous aesthetic beauty. And another love poem, I will not fight to give it up, doing every love spell to weave our future, wrote your name all over the walls of nature, carrying you into my tomorrows, the future of us, as a big measure hope. Just beautiful stuff. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Sure. I just was having a fight with the mute button. I felt like this was a love poem on the surface, but the undertone was quite sorrowful for me. There is a longing, especially in the incantation of spells and the manifestation of love. But it's not just love, it's almost love for one person, and it seems like an unrequited love. So I found it quite gentle and forlorn. Very good job.
Absolutely, great point. And Laurent, will close comments on this one with you. What'd you think?
Yeah, I would agree with Neutron Baum about the undercurrent of sorrow. There seems to be a tone in this piece, which I like, by the way, exhibiting a need for the other partner to recognize exactly how strong the feeling of love is for the world entire, to realize how she feels about the love. The warmth of your hug is like the smell of the fragrant flowers. The words of sorrow fall from my lips as softly as the tears from my eyes. I so wish the world could know the intense love I hold for you. This is not at all a prayer. But having said that, it's almost like a quiet prayer for love. It was a very impressive piece.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. Yeah, very insightful. And let's see. So I see, Neutron, that we've got our next piece on the board. And where are we going with it?
Okay, so if Laurent could give this one a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
All right, this is called Dirt Clawed Heroin by Pam H. Once there was a puddle of mud from which a small girl was born. Dirt caked upon her body, seeping deep into her bones. Soil enriched roots accompanying her wherever she would roam. She rose up against injustice, believing balance to be the middle way. Whenever the scales tipped to extremes, she'd make sure it was hell to pay. She cared nothing for jewelry or diamonds. She preferred her sticks and stones and bits of dangling dirt, all of which were closest to the origins of self, nearest to her roots. Strokers of her inner fire, keeping it brilliant as the sun, reminders of the earth she grew from, leaving nothing behind, integrating all. It's been her ultimate destiny since the day dirt-clawed heroin learned to stand firm instead of succumbing to the forces of society's systematic cowering crawl. End poem.
Wow, great read as always, Luron. Neutron, if we could start with you, what did you think of the piece?
Yeah, but I thought this was a wonderfully weaved story, and the read was fantastic. Almost rejecting jewelry and diamonds, she was enamored by the stones, avoiding the systematic fall, and therefore connecting with her roots. My favorite part was the dirt caked upon her body, seeping deep into her bones, soil and rich roots accompanying her wherever she would roam. Amazing.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really liked it. Inspirational poem of empowerment and coming into her power and the connection to the Great Mother through the root. And the earth is your witness. I found it to be a poem of truth and eternal beauty. Very well done. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I enjoyed this. First of all, I really liked that picture. We actually have a mud run that's done every summer here, and there's a kids' version of it, and it's always so fun to just see the kids run and crawl through the mud and just get dirty and have fun. And I like how this has that sense of connection to the earth, of somebody who knows where they come from. But what I really particularly enjoy is the fact that there's this real sense of individuality, someone who isn't going to be shaped and coerced by society. So I just thought this was a powerful write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. And Laurent, as our reader, I'm giving you final word.
I think if you abandon your roots, metaphorically, you're going to at some point, like a plant or a tree or anything else that grows, dry up and blow away because you've got nothing to attach yourself to, nothing to be true to. We're all at some point loyal to some little plot of earth somewhere. And that plot of earth is not a house, but dirt itself, the essential thing on which we live. And it's a great metaphor for staying true to who you are and true to where you came from. It's a great piece.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. So next up, I see we have Pam's poem.
You know, so you want to take it away when you're ready?
Absolutely.
Whenever you're ready.
A living portrait of Red Flame, and it goes like this. On the second floor of the house, I stare out a window past my backyard, across the alley to the yard of my neighbors. There stands a maple tree reaching outwards and upwards, dressed in crimson leaves, a tapestry of abundance. I am envious of the red dawn upon the branches and the cool shade of which my treeless yard has none to offer, as I am envious of sweethearts who walk aimlessly through the supermarket, whispering sweet nothings, holding hands, and giggling names of admiration. I can't help but think how annoyingly wonderful to be so in love that you don't give a damn about blocking the cream of mushroom soup, because who the hell needs casserole when they can feed upon your public display of affection? and how wonderful it must be to be a maple tree, to be crowned in flames and ooze sweet sap. I look out the window, past the glass, past the roof and the rain gutter that needs mending. And I wonder, dear tree, are you ever filled with doubt? Do you ever think you could be a better version of yourself? It stands in stoic silence, too busy taking care of the birds, the squirrels, and the tiny insects, a living portrait of maternal majesty. And I realize I am talking to myself. My shirt is brown like the leaves that fall to the ground, like a sword tail, like death fluttering on the wind. But my skirt is decorated in swirls of purples, greens, blues, and burnt orange. And I wonder, does a tree ever stare into my window and ask of my skirt, how does she keep her colors from falling apart? End poem.
Great read and great poem, Pam. Thanks so much for bringing it to us. I thought this thing was a joy to read. A strong metaphor, philosophical musings on nature, self, and society. And as you sometimes do for us, you wrapped it with a hint of healthy irony. There was humor in there, and it brought a smile to my face. I read it a couple of times before the show, but even hearing you read it on air, that portion, where is it? Where was it? Because who the hell needs casserole when they can feed upon your public display of affection? Brought a smile to my face every time I read it, that time included. So great job on that.
Thank you.
And let's get you some, absolutely, let's get you some comments. Neutron, your thoughts.
Look, I just thought it was wonderful. Firstly, you start out with the imagery being so dense and descriptive. And then, as you said, you bring in this humor out of nowhere. I'm just trying to find the section. I can't help but think how annoyingly wonderful to be so in love that you don't give a damn in the cream of mushroom soup. I just thought that was wonderful. And then you turn it on its head later on in the poem with the tree looking through your window, wondering how you keep such vivid colours in check from falling apart. It did have a wonderfully philosophical feel to it, but it's classic Pam Ray as far as I'm concerned, and I think it's very well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, Laurent, I'm giving you final words.
Well, I absolutely love the portion that you referenced. I can't help but think how annoyingly wonderful to be so in love that you don't give a damn about blocking the cream of mushroom soup. You know, you go from this stanza which describes the lovers holding hands, giggling names, and then all of a sudden we're warned with the word annoyingly that something else is coming up. And, of course, that's not giving a damn about blocking the cream of mushroom soup. You twist the poem at that point and reveal the soul of a curmudgeon, Pam. Young love is a wonderful thing, a wonderful thing. But, no, tongue-in-cheek, I really like the way you wrote that portion of it. And I especially like the tree. When you ask, are you ever filled with doubts? Could you be a better version of yourself? And does the tree itself look at me and say, how does she keep her colors? I mean, there's something very deep in that last bit that I really, really liked. It's, as usual, you've given us a wonderful piece, Pam.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. And I see our next piece, excuse me, is, hold on one second. I see our next piece is Bobby's piece, and I do have a SoundCloud for that, so let me just pull that.
Lost in the Fire. Inspired by Song of the Terrible by Hilda Morley. Poem. On this chill autumn night, We rest before the fire, the day spent raking leaves, and I absently searching for that one gloriously impeccable and consummate emblem of Maybon. It ran to me on a breath of wind, rolling to my feet, twin-lobed, deeply veined, unblemished, exquisitely symmetrical, perfect. Scarlet as wine, as intensely red as cure that forms over a pinprick. Now I watch the fire, the undulating flames, and you, as you lay sleeping, your head in my lap, the splendid leaf between your fingers, the cozy fire that blazes in our heart, the sublime love that burns brightly within me. This love, wonderful and terrible, that warms me. With your tender voice that sparks my heart, your smile that casts the light of a thousand suns, your touch, a smoldering in my substance, melting me like wax. If I had a voice, I would sing to you the song of fire, terrible fire, wherein I have reduced to ash images of a past love gone wrong. Wonderful fire, resurrecting love and life, for without the spark of your love, I am but kindling. But for now, all is quiet, save the crackling of the fire and the sound of your breathing. And I am lost in the fire and my love of you. End poem.
Great sound, Cloud Bobby. Thanks so much. And Neutron, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Sure. Look, I was drawn to this section here. For without the spark of your love, I am but kindling. But for now, all is quiet, save the cracking of the fire and the sound of your breathing. And I am lost in the fire and my love of you. I think it's a deeply moving piece. And it does have a sensuality to it in the language. I'm unsure whether it's referring to a romantic love or whether it's platonic love or the like, but it was so so beautifully written. I particularly like this. If I had a voice, I would sing to you a song of fire, terrible fire, wherein I have been reduced to ash, images of past loves gone wrong. So it does intimate that it could be referring to a new or an enduring love. Very wonderful.
Absolutely. Great comment. I, too, was drawn to the same closing stanza as you were, so I won't read it again. But I will say that this is one hell of a love poem. Atypical, fresh, raw, and yet tender, vulnerable, honest. Some good ambiguity that really kind of leaves us scratching our heads and thinking, which is always a good thing. Laurent, your thoughts? Are you on mute?
Of course I am. Sorry.
happens to the best of us.
Yes, it does. Happens to all of us. I was really drawn to the penultimate stanza, the one that was just referred to by Neutron. If I had a voice, I would sing to you a song of fire. I really think this is in the top five that I've read that Bobby has written. There's something in this that is really, maybe I'll use your phrase. It does seem raw. It does seem vulnerable in many ways. But the language, the phrasing, is really excellent. This does a very good job of creating images that roll one after the other into a piece of writing that is really absolutely excellent. Superb love piece.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think she did a wonderful job. Yeah, I think you nailed it. And Pam, I'm giving you final word on the piece.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, this is just, it's brilliant and beautiful and powerful. I have to say, just probably actually one of her strongest. And I have to agree with the word law. It does fit. And I really like this love, wonderful and terrible, that warms me with your tender voice that sparks my heart, your smile that casts the light of a thousand suns. There's just a sensuality to this and such a longing, sense of longing. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Pam. And with that, I see that, Neutron, you put on my piece. So,
yes.
So I will go ahead and give that a read. It's called Space for a Moment. Snow-blinded self-love stands naked. Bones, romance, full frontal cover-up face is pinpricked, deflated, shattered. Sentenced to geometric prison, which dance infinite towards their approach of impenetrable zero, as tympanic inner ear's conception lies thin cloaked by soft lens, though filmy, flimsy cataract eye of God floats ever on. That awe cracks the mind's shell. We ascend spiral staircases of interior crystal palaces unbounded, from capillaries to veiny return through atria to pulmonary exhale, airy expulsion into earthy atmosphere till light expands, approaching the infinite seas of time-space. Oh. End of poem.
Great. So we'll get you some comments now, Richard. Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, I've got to admit to Richard that I struggled a little bit with the understanding of this and probably read it half a dozen times until I began to see what he was driving at. Richard is a very skillful poet. All his words have very careful meaning. And I was trying to tease out what I thought he was trying to say. And in my comment, I wrote to him, blinded by the white heat of self-love, our ego shrinks with the removal of the cover-up face. As we recognize the endless shrinking boxes in which we live, dwindling in their insignificance to that impenetrable zero, so filled with awe and understanding, we breathe a different air, an expansion of the inner spirit that transcends and manifests as expanding light, a cosmic infinity. I thought this was a thinking man's piece, impeccably layered. Beautiful job.
Thanks, Laurent.
And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like how this focuses on how we can get past that blinding self-love. I like how the first part, to me anyway, seems to cover the idea of how self-centered we are. The second part feels like it's about going beyond the limitations of the physical into a realm that is ethereal and where the mind can be set free and see. I get this, you just see the possibility of lights and colors and music that are out there in the world, just waiting to be discovered. I think it's just a wonderful thought-provoking write all the way through and very well done.
Agree, Pam, about the thought-provoking. I think it was quite sensory, this piece of poetry that Richard's crafted here. And Richard, I like how you appear to have, in poetic form, expressed breathing and the interaction of the lungs and the heart. And it almost has a meditative quality to it. And above that, the impenetrable zero towards the approach to impenetrable zero. I thought it was really interesting how you incorporated the mathematics in a poetic device, sentenced to geometric prisons which dance infinite. Very well done.
Thanks so much, Neutron. And with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next piece.
Okay, so next we will have Laurent, and I'll just put it on the board now.
All right. This poem was written from a female perspective. It's called Downtown Brown. Grandma claimed I could tempt the sun near my God to me, burn me with its heavenly light, toast me good, crispy brown. An odd notion, I thought, called me Downtown Brown for quite a while. Enjoying the sound of it, she would rise and dip on brown. When she walked, she liked to shuffle dance, hands moving one, two, side to side, and tipsy on blackberry cordial. Eyes closed, rammed a chair, fell, broke her hip. Her heart, too, I expect. No more dancing, but keep the cordials coming. Died happy on a Friday, buried on a cold day. Breath floated in the air as we sang, A Mighty Fortress is Our God, Grandma's favorite hymn. Donuts and cider in the church basement, ladies in one room, men in the other, cigars and cards, giggles, gossip and cordials. Downtown Brown. I always liked that, pretended not to, made her chuckle, tease, then say it again. Began calling my daughter Downtown Brown. Aw, Mom, very dignified she is, but she smiled when I dipped on brown and chuckled. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. So back in the late 80s and early 90s when I was in L.A., I was friends with a bunch of other writers, mainly screenwriters, and there was this saying that was kind of like a cliche, which is that to be really good as a Hollywood screenwriter, they had to laugh when they watched your movie on screen. They had to laugh. They had to cry. They had to willingly kiss their 750 goodbye. And that is a very colorful way of describing what a complete piece of writing is. And that's what this does. It contains wordplay, sense memory, nostalgia, vivid imagery, sorrow, melancholy, spirituality, and above and beyond all these, humor. It's tough to pull off even on a full-length screenplay or a novel or a theatrical play. It's even more impressive that you've done so in a relatively short poem. So I was very impressed, and I think I bookmarked this one. Just a great piece. Very well done.
Thank you, Rich.
Absolutely. Yeah, and let's get you some more comments. So Neutron, your thoughts?
I loved it. I thought it was lovely. It's great to have these moments in time that you can refer back to, even if it is in the female voice. I like the donning of Downtown Brown across the generations. It's tongue-in-cheek and reverential. I also like, I always liked that pretending not to made her chuck teeth and say it again with Downtown Brown. And you get the hunch that Grandma knew that the protagonist was just pretending not to like the nickname. On a personal note, it hit home. Our grandparents, we have not seen them in a long time, COVID restrictions. And it just made me want to give you a big hug, Laurent, and them too.
I'll take that on. Next time I see you.
Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
I really like this. Honestly, my only disappointment is to have found out that Lauren's nickname was not Downtown Brown. I was going to learn how to say Downtown Brown in French and call him that. Le Moiseau Brown, or however you would say it. And
But, you know, I really like how this story is about not only love, but humor passed on through generations. And I think that's such an important part. And even though it's a made-up story, I still think it just really has that wonderful touch of reality. And I like how it's so down-to-earth, and it's got those little tidbits of humor. And the other thing I like about it is it makes me think about how so many brilliant singers got their start in church with the support of a loving mother or parent, such as, you know, Aretha Franklin or Tina Turner. You know, I think there's just some wonderful roots put into this, right? And it's very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great insight, Pam, yeah. And
the only thing I
with
tried
that
to,
was...
I didn't go with a
yeah.
particular prompt. I'm sorry. I didn't go with a particular prompt on this. I just tried to use that rule of the Black Mountain Poets, where a line is a breath, and one thing has to immediately follow another. But beyond that, it was just a story.
Yeah, you definitely sold it. I kind of somehow felt, like Pam said, the authenticity that there was some autobiographical notes embedded in there somewhere. Whether it's true or not, the fact that you sold it to both of us suggests your power as a writer.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And with that, Neutron, we're turning it back to you.
All right. So we've got a poem by Myriad Dark. And, Richard, if you could give this one a read.
Okay. So this is Myriad Dark. It's called Her, Whose Heart-Spoken Tongue. It was her, whose heart-spoken tongue and her breath soft as a morning sigh after Calvary. Twin pearly globes craved by the many who wept tears of blood for a chance to suckle at the Romulus wolf. It began as most post-orgasms do, in bed dressed like open wounds, mindless purpose, born of blindness and cavalier lust. Her breasts were passages spoken in tongues of fire, areola halos, angelic and perfect, mathematical equations, unfathomable to most men, whose hands and lips performed their own secret rituals. We all wear Cain's legacy, collectors of discarded relics and desiccated bone, plagued by edible to lay our heads to suckle and listen to her heartbeat speaking in fiery tongue. End poem. And Pam, if we can start with you.
Oh my goodness, I tell you, he has some brilliant writes, and I really like that he brings mythology into this one. And with the To Suckle the Romulus Wolf, it begins as most post-orgasms do in bed, dressed like open wounds, mindless purpose, born of blindness and cavalier lust. You know, it feels like it reads almost like a tribute to women, but also at the same time there's this real sense of sadness of not only women, but Mother Earth being used and abused, and just the kind of, there's a real sense of I want to say gluttony that I get from this rite, but it's just so wonderfully thought-provoking that it's probably going to take a couple reads, but I think his choice of words, and especially near the last stanza, we all wear Cain's legacy, collectors of discarded relics and desiccated bone. It's just powerful and beautiful, and it's very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. I thought you kind of nailed it. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, you know, when you listen to someone else's comment and you're like, yeah, that's actually what it's meant to be. I'm having that moment now with you, Pam. You've ruined my mojo. But I just thought it was a really dark, centrally written poem, and the ending stanza was just superb. Like, we all wear Cain's legacy, collectors of discarded relics and desiccated bones, plagued by Oedipal guilt, to lay our heads to suckle and listen to her heartbeat speaking in fiery tongues. And what Pam said about the gluttony, I really identify with that, with this poem, you know, with the cavalier lust, the areola payloads and delicate and perfect mathematical equations. But also to draw that correlation to Mother Earth, that was just fantastic.
Absolutely. Great comment. I, too, really like this piece. I actually bookmarked it. That part of it, which we've been dancing around, who wept tears of blood for a chance to suckle at Romulus's wolf. Just so beautiful. And it's one of those aesthetically powerful poems that pull at your core like a magnet. That was the sense viscerally that I got throughout the read when I read it, because I read these aloud. That I was being pulled right at my horror by this magnet of the poem. And it kind of didn't release me until the poem ended. So I thought it was an excellent piece. And Laurence, I'm giving you final word.
Yeah, we're not at odds, Richard, in our appreciation of this piece. It pulled it at me as well. And the stanza that pulled the most was, her breasts were passages spoken in tongues of fire, aureoli halos, angelic and perfect mathematical equations, unfathomable to most men, whose hands and lips perform their own secret rituals. I thought it was extremely adept in its description. And I thought the poem itself is infinitely rereadable. There's something about it that makes you want to consume it one after another times. Really well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I see we've got the next one. Where are we going, Neutron?
So if Pam can give Kel Smiles' poem a read, that would be great.
Sure, absolutely. And this is Rooted by Name by Kel Smiles, and it goes like this. From the roots, the story spread upward throughout the branches, the trunk a bastion of family strength, born in the history of Earth's beginning, sanctioned by the moon and the sunlight, stirring stories of living outside the bounds of resistant tidal currents, the continuation of a bloodline named. If only the mighty tree could speak of the births and deaths of the people named in the stories that dangle from its branches, limbs and leaves, tales of strength, of renewal and continuity, generations follow generations until the final leaf falls to the ground, which leaves the rings to tell the story of a lifetime of family's growth. End poem.
Wow, great read, Pam. This was another great piece. And a lot of people chose that second prompt. And I like where Kels went with it. The family tree is ubiquitous in our culture. And yet she breathes new life into this tree, showing anew why it's such an apt metaphor with such skill and reverence. This is great brevity. Well, very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, initially I thought it was referring to the family tree, but then I thought maybe that Kel was referring to the tree of life and the interconnectedness of the human race, which we are. And I really liked the way that she, as you would say, Richard, riffed with the prompt. And I think above that, it kind of reminds me of when people say they're 100% purebred one particular race. Like, that just doesn't happen. That's just not how it works. We really are interconnected. And when people started doing the family trees and also I think now it's a thing that you can get your DNA tested to see what your origin is, they were finding that people that thought they were 100%, say, Anglo, had up to 8 different nationalities in their DNA plot. So I think my favourite part was generations follow generations until the final leaf falls to the ground, which leaves the rings to tell the story of a lifetime of a family's growth. I'll leave it there.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, we'll close our comments on this one with you.
Yeah, like you said, this is really a fresh look at the family tree. The line, stirring stories of living outside the bounds of resistant tidal currents to the continuation of a bloodline named. Sometimes those stories can go back for hundreds of years. It's got to be a pretty large tree. And in this case, it is the mighty tree that could speak of the births and deaths of the people named in the stories. We all have stories. And doing a family tree is really quite fascinating and absolutely very, very difficult to construct. If you've ever tried to go back, there are people you will discover, and you don't have enough branches, and who's related to who. I mean, it's all very fascinating. And this is quite a look at something that might be taken a little more seriously than it otherwise is.
Great comment, Laurent. And with that, we'll move on to our next one, Neutron. Where are we going?
Okay. So this one is by James George, and it's called Speaking with My Second Great-Grandfather. I felt the trickle of your DNA running through my system. No parts more or less important as all are needed to make us click. The presence of the mind is compelling and dominant. So the heart is what we remember until the last breath, ancestors, in me all at once in bits and pieces that shed uniqueness in my interpretive abilities. You appeared as a crude, thin man, intellect starved, with bad habits, and yet your smile betrayed you. My second great-grandfather, no more or less important than all the rest, each being worthy of their own study and song.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, I really like this piece. You appeared as a crude, thin man, intellect starved, with bad habits, and yet your smile betrayed you. Yes, this penultimate stanza reveals a bit about his great-grandfather, but I like its mystery, the fact that he doesn't disclose too much, instead allows the reader to wonder what his great-grandfather's smile betrayed and how that smile influenced him and his life. It's just something that I enjoy immensely in literature in general and in poetry in particular, when you have mystery held, the ambiguity preserved throughout the storytelling. It's just a wonderful technique, and he pulls it off quite successfully here. And Laurent, your thoughts on the piece?
I was struck by the same stanza that you were, and I wondered why he described him as a crude, thin man, intellect starved, with bad habits. And one wonders whether those bad habits transferred, but the point of the whole thing is, of course, ancestors in me all at once, in bits and pieces that shed uniqueness in my interpretive abilities. It takes a great many bits to make us up, and every bit is an anchor to who you are, and yet may be. And those bits come from all our ancestors, some bits better than others, but bits they be. That was an excellent piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, as the reader, I will give you final word. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think it was a happy accident that we followed with James George's poem After Kel Smiles. And I think for me, I felt the trickle of your DNA running through my system. No parts more or less important, as all are needed to make us click. That was a great segue from Self Smiles into this poem here. And I was drawn to the same section you both were. But I will say that clearly his second great-grandfather had a pull on his heart, and at least that's my interpretation of it, even though he has the caveat that his relatives are no more or less important than all the rest. But that smile betraying you, Lion, I really identify with that, possibly that whole stanza, really, that sometimes people let on that they're not really they don't really have that self awareness. But ultimately, if you do have self awareness, that smile will betray you. So very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. You guys are on fire tonight. So I see you've got our next piece up, Neutron. Where are we going with it?
Okay, so if Laurent can give this one a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
All right. And this is going to be It Has Come by Ken Smith. Sits low over the dark river, patient, solemn, waits. Cormorants, black against the black curtain of night, dry their wings, spread open on rocks of the reef. Until with geese and ducks, all stop squawking. A giant yellow moon, gleaming massive boulder, hangs above the water, begins to drop flakes of ashes like small feathers. Cold breeze brushes its cheek. It says without saying that summer's over. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. So, Pam, I think I did this right, that you were actually able to hear it, that poem, and had time to read it. Is that correct?
Did you say my name?
I did, yeah, because I saw you were back.
Yes.
Did you have a chance to read that
yes.
one? Cool.
I did get a chance to hear this one and read this one. And I think, you know, Ken Smith is an absolute master when it comes to brevity. His use of beautiful and simple imagery that conveys a message and a meaning. And I like how he describes the full moon as a gleaming massive boulder hangs above the water and drop flakes of ash like small feathers, cold breeze brushes its cheek. You know, it's a beautiful rite all the way through, but the idea that it conveys the changing of the seasons, the simple imagery and the silence within the moon, I think is just beautiful and stunning and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really love this piece. I thought it was a stunning poem full of vivid descriptions, which not only complement the Olson quote, but also riff very well off of the image, which, yes, is like a harvest moon. Very nicely done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was drawn to the same section that Pam just mentioned, so I won't mention it again. But the second part of the poem is really at one with the prompt, and it's almost a delectable word picture. And I think, personally, that if he had have left that image out, you still would have conjured the similar image from his word choices. I love the cormorant imagery. I think it's perfect for the poem. And I think he's carried that elegance throughout the poem also.
Excellent comment. Absolutely. And Laurent, as the reader, I'm giving you the final word.
Wow, it's a proper brevity. It really is. He paints with words and does it beautifully. A really vivid brevity. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. And with that, I see we've got our next piece up. Neutron, you put it up. And this one does have a SoundCloud, so let me go ahead and play that.
Indeed.
Africa, adieu. Drums thrum, strums first balmy summer's night. Harvest moon bays. Bats no eyelid up there behind the hill. Jackals whimper uncertain. Tacit comprehension of solstice celebration. Placed in Pisces, rivers thrum, strum emotions. Rage of rapids around the corner. Federico Lorca's little ashes interjects, circumspect liaison with Salvador Dali. Why are poets magnet drawn to painters? Kivit retorts in moonlit grass. Clarion call echoes across felt. Motions towards monoliths on hill move. Shapeshifters point fingers. Sacred Khoisan place of rituals. Harvest moon sacrifices made. Monoliths remember. Unworldly lunar light arrests attention. Suspended in decision time. Anchored at a place west of Cape Town, named Pater Noster by stranded Portuguese sailors, ship ran aground on rosary rock boulders, place of our Heavenly Father. Names arrests, guardian protect places. Came an angel avalanche last night, sacred ibis flock alighted, white wings edged with black sent hallelujahs heavenward, hosannas hailed life's holy grail, gracious curve of chorister beaks, obsidian eyes glowed knowingly. Auspicious visitation clearer than daylight. First morning light street. Zestful residues abided. Little ashes swept away while steam vapors explore muscled plains. Smell of cedarwood excites cubistic slices of pictorials. Concave buttock muscles contract. Inaudible whispers conspire, reminds of cattle dipping farm days, halter falter, then wild lunge, precipice plunge, plaintive bleat in the air, horns and heads disappear beneath dip tank water, sauna similar, vague shapes blend, strong back bends forward. End result more muted than cattle dipping. Africa dew, heart remains behind. Tallow candle hope waits bright, truthful. Head heads to northern climes. Once jet setters obtain the green light. Sterling pounds desirable. Expiate employment anonym. Heart remains on ice. Sacred ibis dream one side. Askari warriors flip the dream coin. Natives loyal to colonial setters centuries ago stood between me and sacred ibis angel avalanche. Woke up, mind dream blanched. Africa adieu. Will departure decision be blown away like little ashes? Why are poets drawn to painters and poems?
Whew. That was a powerful exploration of the Black Mountain experience. So first things first. Frederico Lorca's Little Ashes interjects circumcept liaison with Salvador Dali. Why are poets magnet drawn to painters? I thought this was a skillful tribute to the Black Mountain experience, which shows how artists using different mediums inspire each other. Beyond this, it was a tribute to Africa and all that was lost, while simultaneously celebrating all that was spiritually gained. And I thought that was illumined by the phrasing, came an angel avalanche last night, sacred ibis block alighted, white wings edged with black scent, hallelujahs heavenward, hosannas hail life's holy grail. So much beauty in there. Just very deep, bright, very layered, very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I was drawn to the line, heart remains on ice. And I thought it was a visceral, personal interpretation of leaving behind that which is familiar, possibly home. And the question that was posed, why are poets drawn to painters? I suppose it's because we are cut from the same cloth. Beyond that, it was a very thought-provoking write. And just lastly, just an observation, I love the way that he's referred to the ibis as sacred, because in Australia, we call them the bin chicken. And I think they deserve a lot more than that. So I do really enjoy the ibis imagery that he's put into this poem.
Absolutely. Yeah, we actually have a kind of a bird sanctuary here in our backyard in Florida, and the ibis they loom large. They are quite aggressive, and they try and scare away the other birds. So I could see how they could get a bad rap, but they are, you know, quite beautiful. That white plumage, and there's something very sacred about them. So I understood why the tribute. And Pam, your thoughts?
Well, I tell you, this has been a night of just stunning poetry, and this is no exception. He's just got wonderful imagery all the way through. I like that it asks the question, why are poet magnets drawn to painters? You know, the whole idea of that people who are all, you who are creative, are drawn to each other. And I like that there's a sense of, like, history and celebration of the beauty of a place, and then the sense of leaving it, and how when you leave a place that you've known most of your life, that there's that kind of, like, you leave a part of yourself behind. It has a beautiful spiritual feel to it, and it's very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, Laurence, I'm giving you final word on this one.
Yeah, Africa is one of those continents that has been the doom of many a person who can't get Africa out of their system. They've gone back time after time. Ultimately, some of them have died. Others have written books, poetry, essays on Africa, the dark continent, a place of mysteries, a place where you can leave your mind behind almost. And as I read this, I almost get the sense of so many things happening, places of history, for instance, anchored at a place west of Cape Town named Paternoster by stranded Portuguese sailors. And then his use of the ibis, came an angel avalanche last night, sacred ibis flock alighted. I love the way he calls it an angel avalanche with white wings edged with black, sent hallelujahs heavenwards, hosannas hailed life's holy grail. You want to talk about beautiful writing, wonderful imagery. It's perhaps just a wee bit abstract here and there. It's in its employment of language. Yet a second read should answer questions. I love the lines, Africa adieu, heart remains behind, tallow candle hope waits bride truthful. Very nice piece. Really worthwhile reading a second or third time.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron.
Thank you. And Pam, could you read Half a Glass by Iona Cosma?
I would be happy to. All right. This is House of Glass by Iona Cosma, and it goes like this. What in the name of a rose requires a respite from awesomeness and youth is a thing that nags like a disc on replay now and then, the daylight of my skin, the first creases almost invisible, then it gets thicker and deeper like killing ivy. The other day I saw this teenager with long black hair, looked like mine 20 years ago from the back. I behold my mini mane, blonde now, supposed to mollify age and features, etc. But now it's a house, at least. It used to be a fisherman's tent. Strange how we become more devoted to those crumbling temples as time goes by. How in the rashness of youth death seemed like a joke, and now it puts to shame keen rigor. Stay on this flesh as parchment, leave gone by locks of curly hair that I imagine turned me into a high duck, riding, riding, riding. So what, even death is supposed to be riding the scarecrow from hell. It is the mind that becomes more beautiful, more sophisticated, as bones dry and eyes drown. This embellished mind has a sense of beauty, yet it never sees what it needs to be seen, the Kai, the life, the awaiting womb, and poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, I love her work. Very skillful riffing off the Creeley poem. She shows the varied mental and physical gymnastics we apply to the aging process. And despite her skillful outlining of the slings and arrows, her closing stanza hints at the beauty in growing old along with me, as well as the spiritual promise that lies beyond, as it follows a masterful right. And another one that I bookmarked. So it's going to be a tough contest to judge, but that's always a good thing. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I thought it was superb. I couldn't have put it better myself, especially that last stanza. I think the struggle is real, especially for women who are largely forgotten when beauty fades, if you let them. But I think Iona has captured that beauty is not skin deep, and the development of the mind is very important, possibly more important and more lasting than some good looks. So I thought it was a nuanced read on the need for self-acceptance, and it was very inspiring.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I think Laurent may have just left.
Oh, okay. Let's go to our reader of the poem, Pam. What do you think?
This is just absolutely beautiful. I like how it takes us on the journey of thoughts of somebody who's aging. You know, I mean, this is totally relatable. You know, as someone who's on the closer side of 50 than 40, I have to say I can relate to looking at those young women who remind me of myself in my 20s, who studies, you know, every hair that goes down the drain, every line that shows up at the face. But then, you know, you also think of the blessings and the strengths that come with aging. And I think this is just a beautiful and honest look at the whole process of becoming beautiful, of becoming a deeper person, more connected to the earth and the womb, even as you grow older. So just an excellent rite and very well done.
Absolutely. And with that one, I'm really turning it over to you, Neutron.
Yeah, so I thought I should probably put my poem on the board, so here we go. And it's called To Feel Something. Life is a series of relapses punctured by periods of harmonization. My seven-month itch is like a prolapsed arsehole. The pelvic floor muscles and lower back pain spasm. I am one cough away from being stitched up by a surgeon whom on paper appears to have made better decisions in slicing strife, grabbing it by the pussy. If this were a stage production, I'd be on the golf range with tea between teeth, waiting for the proverbial smack in the face, the skit worthy of Larry, Moe and Curly. It's the viscera that questions authenticity. I wear my piano teeth in a grin, like a scout's badge, melancholic dribbles of calcium and blood mask deep-seated notions of living. End the poem.
Holy hell, Neutron. I have to say, nobody writes like you do. It really is intense. And to hear you recite it live on the air is quite a treat. I mean, every poet has their own voice, absolutely. But I have a feeling that if Sylvia Plath were to somehow reincarnate, you know, just those lines, there's just so much in there. But, you know, the surgeon whom on paper appears to have made better decisions and slicing strife, grabbing a side of the pussy, just, it's you know what it's like a car accident that you know you don't want to look, but you have to look. That's what this piece is. You give us that gut punch, betraying societal evils, mass and institutional authority figure garb. It is just an amazing piece of work and a great ad for our show tonight. Very well done.
Thanks, Richard.
Absolutely. And Pam, what'd you think?
Wow, you know, you are so edgy when it comes, and gritty when it comes to, you have just a sense of humor that just has that wonderful, dry, rough edge to it. I like the message of life is a series of relapses punctured by periods of harmonization. And then I am one cough away from being stitched up by a surgeon whom on paper appears to have made better decisions in slicing strife. To me, it's just that whole idea that I get is that some people don't always treat us like we know our own bodies. And there are times where the mind and the body feels like it's falling apart and nobody is listening. It has the kind of imagery that really just punches you in the gut and grabs your attention, and it's definitely very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Much appreciated.
Absolutely,
and,
Pam.
I've
great comment. Okay.
And the next poem, Richard, would you be able to give this one a read by Ursula McCabe?
Sure. So this is Frolic by Ursula McCabe. Beyond the roof next door, sun punctuates a bright yellow poplar tree. Enclosed by fences and old garages, this yard is penned in, corralled to a slower awakening. Last roses have forgotten to be elegant. Instead, they dance themselves up to light, unruly pink cherubs. It is the last cotillion for the flowers, and though smaller, their colors stand out against the brown that may be drab, but also carries hints of gold and poem. Let's see. Neutron, if we can start with you.
Sure. I thought the vivid use of color was really imaginative, and I think just brown being drab, but it also carries hints of gold. It's very apt that when you go into a garden, it's almost the culmination of the colors that makes it magical. It's not just the beauty of the rose. My favorite stanza was, the last roses have forgotten to be elegant. Instead, they dance themselves up to light, unruly pink cherubs. Our Mr. Lincoln Rose can get to 2 meters plus high trying to chase the sun. It's just a shame to prune the garden at the end of the season and witness the dormancy of life in our garden, but there's always the hope that next season they will rise once more. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, what do you think?
I really like this. One of the things I really appreciate about Ursula's poetry is the fact that you could see and feel her love for nature and her surroundings in her poetry. And I like the way that this celebrates the magic of the end of summer. And such wonderful imagery all the way through, but I especially like the last roses have forgotten to be elegant and said they dance themselves up to light, unruly pink cherubs. A wonderful imagery, a great write, and very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too really like this, and it was a joy to read on the air with you guys. I kind of like got the flow of it, and then I really got the flow of it towards the end, and it just was one of those poems that melts in your mouth, just begging to be read aloud, which is really classic poetry. That's, I think, what distinguishes it from prose, is that it's musicality, and that really came through here. It was quite a spiritual brevity, asking us to see the beauty in late flowering, as well as their seasonal demise, to see hope and promise embedded therein. A wonderful piece. Very well done. And with that, I'm bringing it back to you, Neutron.
Thanks. I've got a rite of passage poem here, and I'll give this one a read. So it's called Bedrock by Rite of Passage. Plants in the dry soil always have the deepest roots. Find the bedrock before you judge it a weed. End poem.
Great read. And Pam, what were your thoughts on this one?
Oh my goodness. I tell you, this is one of those poems that says so much in a few words. And I love that she made it into a shape poem and that she put the extra like zeros and O's there to convey the idea physically of the bedrock or the soil, and you know the whole idea, the message of not judging a book by its cover. It's just a wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. A lot being offered to us in this philosophical brevity, and I did like the shape being the shape of the image, the cactus, obviously the core of the cactus, which if you think about it, is the message of the poem, too. So a much appreciated brevity, and I agree, Pam, very well done. And Neutron, what did you think?
I thought it was great. I really liked it. It almost had a cactus feel to it. I think it would have been hard to make it a true cactus given the word cap. And then you have to find the bedrock within the poem, which I thought was interesting also. And find the bedrock before you judge it as a weed. I think it kind of points to, like in Australia, we have a lot of pretty plants that are considered noxious weeds. And I think it's really, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and also substance. So I think she's captured that with that right.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next piece.
Okay, so we have I Love Poems up next, and there should be a SoundCloud.
Aha. I will grab that.
I Love Poems. One day, and Jura, at the hour when the dawn was awaking, since any noise, only my soul and I left the painful path, following clouds that have fled. I couldn't stay near any longer. My thoughts flew one by one, seeing a happy bird waving a twig, leaves were falling, seeing a butterfly dancing between beautiful flowers and a blue sky. I screamed in silence, a joyful scream, and I forgave. À l'heure où l'aube s'éveillait, sans aucun bruit, seule mon âme et moi, j'ai quitté un passé pénible, suivant des nuages qui ont pris fuite. Je ne pouvais demeurer près plus longtemps. Mes pensées s'envolaient une à une en voyant un oiseau heureux agitant un rameau. Ses feuilles tombaient en voyant un papillon danser entre les belles fleurettes et le ciel bleu. J'ai crié dans le silence des cris de joie et j'ai pardonné. End of poem.
Wow, great SoundCloud, Zawa. You know, I don't speak French, but I always appreciate the musicality of her poetry in French as well as the beauty in English. So the ability to have it in multiple languages like that is a real treat. Pam, if we can start the comments with you, what'd you think?
You know, she has an absolutely beautiful reading voice. And I love how she writes this brevity, like there's a connection to nature, like she can feel the sadness and her own sadness and anger reflected in the movement of the clouds. And I really like how therapeutic that last line is. I screamed in silence, a joyful scream, and I forgave. There's such a sense of healing and moving forward, especially with ending with the line, and I forgave. So wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too really love this piece. I thought it was a beautiful poem of spiritual renewal and redemption, a great riffing off of the prompt. And, you know, she always really does bring it something very special and sacred and spiritual in much of her offering for these shows. So we really appreciate it. And Neutron, I'm giving you final word on this one.
Yeah, so the saying goes, you should forgive those who have done you wrong, not for their benefit, but to cease the swallowing of poison, expecting the other person to drop. But it's so freaking hard to do that, and I find it hard to forgive personally, so I found these lines really resonated. I scream in silence, a joyful scream, and I forgave. Amazing.
Absolutely. Great comment. With that, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so if Pam can give Daniel Deschino's poem a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
You did say my name, right?
Yep.
Okay. Absolutely. Pinked by Daniel Deschino. And it goes like this. Age be nothing but a canvas, and pain be the paint with what is hidden to those walking through the gallery are the layers
oh so many that I have painted over. Look beyond my eyes for an x-ray into the past. Listen as I cry watercolors of green and blue. Shade your eyes as a scream pastels of violet and red, and warm for my laugh with orange and yellow happiness. But beware of black and gray, for like the night, they hide the colors that daylight sings. And the black that you see, that inhuman shadow of grotesque remembrance, that is the brush from which I paint the evil I have seen, the evil I have done. Those are the demons I have slain that lie buried beneath my feet, ripped and disintegrated and blown off in the wind. And the darkest ones, the ones that reflect no light, the ones devour all paint, no matter what color I try. Those demons of tenacious torment, those specters of poisonous breath that infect my lungs with smoke seemingly from the fires of hell itself. If those you still must see, just look closely between the colors on the edge of the canvas and behind my eyes. Just please be kind, and I will do the same. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, this is a deeply layered poem of man's imperfect nature with special emphasis on Jungian shadow, which he represents by the color black. And that black that you see, that inhuman shadow of grotesque remembrance, that is the brush from which I paint the evil I have seen, the evil I have done. Plus, he gives us Jung's solution to shadow as well, which is awareness, acceptance, and action. Just please be kind, and I will do the same. I thought it was just a formidable piece of poetry. Very well done. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Yeah, look, I thought this was very powerful. It kind of reminded me of the picture of Dorian Gray in its depictions. I like the duality that was incorporated in with the vibrant color against the monotone gray and black. It was very strong as far as the poem goes, and I was immediately drawn to, but beware of black and gray, for like the night, they hide the colors that daylight sings. And I suppose all I can say to Daniel Deschino is we must embrace the dark, but remember that the dark of the night is the bride of the stars. Very well done.
Great comment. And Pam, as our reader, I'm going to give you final word on this piece.
Yeah, I thought this is a beautiful and haunting dark right, and I like that it had that idea of looking past all the surface layers and to the layers beneath, and that the idea that we're created from our experiences that are both good and bad. So just a powerful right and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron.
Great. So I'll give this one a read. And it's by Tom Bone, and it's called Navigating the Dark. Traveling an artery, not knowing which ends the heart, night slowly clotting around the pebbled, pedaled path. Pale in the glow of the moon, just waning, clouded two-cog blanket, like a nightlight on the ceiling of my winding corridor home. One wall, the water, still opaque, boat-studded, sinuous spirit level of the valley's ribs. The other, the hedgerow, the fields, the floodplain town's tentacles flickering out. Roots already stutter the tarmac-tamed towpath, projected from my handlebars between hulks of wildflower verges. Somewhere, grasshoppers begin. The worst thing now is the lights of the village, my accustomed eyes blinded in the glare of the floodlit gardens of the retirement homes, the path guessed at a free will to memory of countless commutes, the pubs quiet, the schools closed. The cost-benefit of resurfacing runs out and the path reverts to dirt dried by the Indian summer star-dusted carpet to glide under thinning skies as the valley widens and turns. Retracing the route of the first water, I turned as the towpath turns, as the canal turns, as the hill twists and turns, the river long gone below. It's like the back of my hand, in the clear of day, muscle memory of the wheel, smooth, shallow grooves to cruise through the stars for footlights, making hay of moonshine. Till the wood descends the hill, the racing line obscured in shadow, the whole path bathed in dark, trusting to the dim shape of boats, LED-lit landing lights to be paralleled consistently on a curve, window spill in the middle distance of pitch black to aim my handlebars at, is the corner before the home straight of starlight, a steady procession home to these four potholes. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, there's a real reverence for landscape and its beauty in this poem that's quite breathtaking. Kind of reminded me of a poetic version of an old John Ford movie, you know, how he had that big landscape, big sunsets, sunrises over the west, that vastness. I think that was conveyed quite well in this poem. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh my goodness, this has just such beautiful imagery. I like the way he makes his stanzas flow, and I like the way he takes us along and into the visuals and the thoughts had while taking a walk, and that he reminds us of how silent life can be at times. The path guests at a free wheel to memory of countless commutes, the pubs quiet, the schools close, the cost benefits of resurfacing runs out, and the path reverts to dirt. It's such, the path reverting to dirt, I think, makes such a great metaphor. And it's wonderful imagery all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, I'm giving you, as our reader, the final word on this piece. What do you think?
I thought he crafted almost a visual masterpiece, and I felt like I was riding through his neck of the woods. It was so vivid and sensory. And I suppose, just a note, isn't it funny how a path traveled during daylight hours can appear so different under the blanket of night? And I think that's also a metaphor for life as well, in that when the cards aren't all shown, you just need a bit of faith to make the next step. Very enjoyable.
Absolutely. So we are pretty close to the end of our show. As opposed to trying to push through another poem, I think what I'd like to do is have Pam tell us what's coming up tonight at 12:30 Eastern Time.
Absolutely. Well, 12:30 is Into the Darkness, and I decided that I wanted people to be inspired by the darker side of Robert Frost. So we offered up about four of his poems that are darker in nature and asked people to be inspired by them. And so, you know, any readers, writers, and poetry, on-topic poetry is welcome.
Awesome. So, yeah, so join Pam in a half an hour from now. And in addition, you know, I want to let everyone know, you know, fill my eyes with poetry, open mic, tomorrow night, 10 to 12, and bring a poem, bring your voice, join her on the air. Beyond all that, I want to thank Tom and Laurent and Pam for your comments, your critiques, your poetry, and of course my co-host Neutron. Thank you so much for everything you do, and this show especially. Thanks for all your efforts. And I'd like to give final thanks to the poets that write for our show. Without you guys, there is no show. So as always, our sincere thanks. It was truly a wonderful night of poetry. I'm going to be scratching my head and asking Neutron for her assistance in what's going to be a very difficult night of poetry to judge when we get to the contest. But, you know, we'll do our best. And the main thing is we got to read the poems on the air, comment on them, and have a lot of fun with the Black Mountain poets. So I see we've got maybe 20 seconds left. So I'll just say thanks again to everyone, and special thanks to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. And have a great night. See everyone soon on the air again. Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Have a good night. Bye now.
Bye.